The available AKG 36 speaker sound system in the Cadillac Escalade provides 360-degree sound, so you hear studio sound on the road. The 2021 Cadillac Escalade. Never stop arriving.
I'm Brian Goldfinger of Goldfinger Injury Lawyers. Is your insurance company forcing you to go back to work when your doctors say you can't? If this sounds familiar, look no further than my law firm. Visit goldfingerlaw.com and get us working for you.
Welcome to the Raptors weekly podcast for the week of September 24th. We are joined one last time by the ghost and the memory. No, I'm kidding. We're joined by Blake. Blake, buddy.
Hey, man.
We already miss you so much, even though you're still writing about...
Even though I died last Monday.
Rest
in peace.
I know you don't like to talk about yourself too much, so... What was the outpour of support like when you put that post up about, nine years?
Nine years and change, yeah.
Yeah. So you and DeMar.
Basically, from the minute DeMar got in to the minute DeMar walked out.
Bro, we're losing a lot of pillars of the franchise, man.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going anywhere. Yeah. Still going to be on the Raptors beat full time.
Okay, good. Because you gotta repeat that for people to hear, because people are worried,
yeah,
man. People
some people thought I was dead. Some people thought I was leaving the industry entirely. The thing is like, I could tell that I really appreciate all the support and the nice tweets and stuff like that. I could tell very much that most people only read the first, like, two sentences. Because it said right in there that I'm still going to be covering the Raptors full time. But it was great, man. It was nice. That stuff you guys posted was nice, even though it was all lies.
Wow.
I thought Zavar's blurb was more appropriate, whereas, like, Blake's gone. We're going to be fine. Let's go.
No, come on.
Yeah.
No, we're going to miss you on the side, man, of course. Like, you know.
Yeah, the site's going to be fine, though, man.
The
site
really is
the roster that, like, I was sending Zarar and Sam after I let them know. I sent them, like, kind of a roster of, like, this person contributes this much and this is what they're good at. And and I talked to everyone before I announced publicly, so it didn't catch anyone off guard. And it's like, man, the roster's like 15 deep of people who want to contribute at least like once a week. And like, you've got people like Vivek and Katie and Colin and Lewis and Anthony, like, and Matt, and then like Scott chips in with the Canada basketball stuff. And I'm forgetting a lot of people, but like, the roster's deep, man. And
Zarar's writing his very Zarar type columns.
Yeah.
Every Zarar column is a Zarar column.
Honestly, it's something that I actually thought the site lacked when I was doing most of the writing, is that like, sometimes I'm a little serious, you know? And that's why it's nice to have people in there who do creative stuff, or Zarar, who is just, like, unabashedly Zarar. And, you know, it'll be fun, man. I think there's, obviously, with your podcast, and then we're still going to have quick reactions, which are kind of the heart of that community, right?
Yeah, for people to scream at each other about JV.
Yeah. Yeah, or to scream at whoever wrote it that B- should be a B or a C+ instead.
Yeah, I mean, coming from an Asian parenting background, that's very familiar and doesn't seem at all out of odds. In fact, a B-, it's not even to say at that point. I mean, it's basically an F.
It's basically the fact that you only gave out A+ and Fs when you were doing them is pretty tight. No, Raptors probably going to be great still, though.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I know you joked about me on for the pod for the last time, but, like, I still come on the podcast. I even joked in the post. I was like, finals preview podcast.
That's not a joke. I've already got a plan, all right? Put it on my calendar soon.
Which Warrior does Kawhi defend? Which Warrior does OG defend? Man. Who can contain Pascal Siakam, point forward?
I was going to say, like, if Pascal's going against Draymond, like, you might want to make...
Pascal Siakam, a.k.a. Humble Draymond.
Listen, the Draymond comparisons are coming out into full effect. Okay, let me just ask you then, because one of the few pieces of news that happened this week was Rico Hines, the guy that runs the UCLA run... had a lot of great things to say about Pascal. He already told some of that stuff to Dave Zarum for Sportsnet, but then he also went on TSN Radio and sort of reiterated a lot of effusive praise for the Raptors bench, especially Pascal, calling him a little bit like Draymond. Like, what did you first think Pascal was going to be when he first got here?
Man,
he just looked like an energy guy. I thought he was going to be like, you know, Farid or something like
that. Yeah, so it's funny. I remember... The first time I ever went to Summer League was the year Pascal got drafted, and he was this, not unknown, because he did two college years, but he was 27th overall, and that was looked at like a stretch. And then he only played 15 minutes in summer league because he hurt his knee.
Yeah.
So those 15 minutes were incredible. Mm-hmm. I remember I did one of Sportsnet's The Big Read, like the really deep dives that they do there, and I did some when I was freelancing for them. And I tried to dive into that. And I was like, I had people at the Raptors telling me, like, look, he's not a 4-5, which is what you look at his rebounding numbers and his shot blocking in college and his post-oriented game in college. And it's like, okay, he's a 4 who maybe plays some small ball 5. And they were like, no, he's a 4-3. He's going to defend 3 perimeter positions, like 2 through 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously size-wise, maybe he's not a 5. But they were pretty adamant. They're like, if it breaks right, like he could be a starting power forward. Obviously, that still depends on whether the shot comes along. But at the time, basically, the conclusion of my piece was like, yeah, they got him 27th and they left some good names on the board because they had him ranked as a first round player. Now, I don't think that they would have figured it came this fast. Like, Dwayne Casey was throwing around Bo Outlaw comparisons at the time,
which
is, you know,
classic Dwayne Casey comparison. Just a random dude from the early 2000s.
Right, that sounds like a low end comparison, but I'm pretty sure Bo Outlaw, like, sniffed some all defense teams, which is not nothing. And, you know, the gap between Bo Outlaw and Draymond Green is notable because Draymond is one of the most uniquely impactful defensive players of all time. But yeah, man, Siakam's developed so fast, and I think defensively, everyone kind of saw it right away, even when he was overexposed in those first 38 games or whatever.
That first preseason game, when it was in Vancouver, and that was the first look we got at the new look Warriors, because KD signed, Pascal guarded KD on one of those possessions and blocked him. Like, the first time they went up against each other, Pascal blocked him.
I remember his first 2 weeks as a starter, he went against, like, KD, Melo.
Yeah.
It was, like, full-on, like, here, we're just going to throw a ton of elite guys at you and see how you do. Now, look, those games, he was overmatched. He couldn't really put the ball on the floor yet. The three wasn't there. And even defensively, he was a little too reactive. He's so high twitch and high energy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of his defense is being so quick and agile that he can make up for that. But you saw it, right? You saw it defensively. I don't think anyone saw the offensive game developing this quickly. I think people were like, okay, get the three down, and then you can be a 3-and-D guy.
Yeah.
You know, to project from where he was to the type of guy who can grab a defensive rebound, run the floor, initiate a pick and roll, and either drive with either hand or kick to a corner shooter. Like, the fact that came along, not even just last year, by the end of his time with the 905, is crazy. And I heard in camp last year, you know, those guys did those runs together all the time before they were always on YouTube.
Yeah.
And guys were raving. Guys were like, Pascal looks real good. And I've heard some of the same stuff talking to guys this summer.
Yeah.
You know, at Summer League, he wasn't out there playing, right? So we didn't get a look at him. But I think it's a testament to how hard he works and a testament to the idea that, you know, sometimes you don't know what a guy is until you get him in and he's got NBA level training. Like, Pascal got a late start.
Yeah.
He went to a smaller school. Everything we learned about him from college was that, you know, he's always trying to read books or like watch video to get better. And you hear that about, you know, 70% of the guys in the NBA.
Raleigh Malkin's a big worker, you know?
Yeah. But no, it's great, man. And I'm excited to see what he looks like. I don't know if he fits in the starting lineup, but, you know, the way the bench mob looked toward the end of last year where, you know, DeLon was an average three-point shooter and Fred's an elite three-point shooter. If you can get the ball in Pascal's hands more, and now, you know, if Serge or JV are the center in those units instead of Jakob Poeltl, you know, your spacing or your roll gravity is even greater. That bench unit could be really, really good offensively. And I don't think they're going to take a real slide defensively either. So, Siakam's really exciting, man. I think he's the guy that, obviously Kawhi is the guy everyone's most interested to see, but in terms of changes to their game and how they look in a similar role, he's the guy that I'm like, okay, he has the most, of anyone who's still on the roster, I think he's got the most room to elevate this coming season. And that's not to say OG can't either, but OG with those starts, especially if he starts, is going to have that same role.
Yeah, he's the fifth option. Yeah. I think
that was a really long-winded answer.
No, that's okay.
I'm excited for the season.
Everyone is excited for Pascal, and I think rightfully so.
He's spicy, man.
He really is spicy. He's got the personality for it, too. I think you really got to give credit to Stackhouse and all the other coaches down at 905 for allowing him to expand his game. That's a perfect example of why you get a 905 team. You get a G League team. because you want to have these opportunities where, like, if Pascal stayed up with the Raptors all year, right? Like, all he was going to do was run and catch outlet passes and hit, like, a baseline jumper.
Yeah. Which would be fun. He's still amazing in transition.
Sure. But, I mean, like, you know what I mean? It's like he doesn't get the same room to operate and expand his skill set. And I think he developed a lot at the 905. You got to also
credit.
Like,
he was going 20-10 through the playoffs. So. He was the finals MVP.
Yeah. And rightfully so.
You didn't watch those games.
I watched the one Bruno game. That was crazy.
Oh, yeah. Bruno going like 30-15.
And it was like, he went Klay Thompson kind of for like a quarter. by the way, rest in peace, Bruno. That's who we really got to say
goodbye. Bruno, you want to talk about, it's funny.
How is he still in the league?
It's funny you mentioned Bruno and Klay Thompson as we're coming back from training camp or to training camp here, where I think those two guys have the best offseason photos of any NBA player. Klay Thompson just like
In Qatar or wherever the hell he was. Yeah.
Was he riding a camel?
That's what happened.
And then Bruno with all the rest of the Rockets. Yeah. And I think half the league didn't know he had signed with the Rockets at that point. And he's just in the tiniest speedo.
Of course, man. It's a Brazilian thing. I feel like
jacked, man.
Good for him, man. Good for
him.
He's
put on a ton of size over 4 years.
Yeah, he does.
It was fun. I caught up with him a couple weeks ago. I did that piece for Diamond Up Rocks.
He's got a kid now, right?
Yeah, he just had a kid.
Yeah.
It sounds like getting traded by the Raptors and getting out of that safety net kind of matured him a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think he has a chance on earth of making the Rockets, but
Rio
Grande Valley, man. He could be a stretch five.
Honestly, that's probably what they're thinking with him, because he's already like 6'10 and everything like
that. He's 7 feet tall.
He's seven full. Yeah, exactly.
He was 6'9" 4 years ago when he was 18.
That's true.
They never update the media guide height and weight. So anyway.
Oh, I was also going to say, but also I think you got to give a lot of credit to Nick Nurse and his offense for allowing more, you know, flexibility for all the bigs, right? Because like the big difference between 16-17 and 17-18 was like how much more the bigs could make plays. Not necessarily have the ball all the time, but just like be in positions where they're making the final decision.
Even the difference between a dribble handoff and a stationary handoff was big for JB because, you know, then you've got your defender moving when you set that screen and you've got a step of momentum when you make your roll. And, you know, that came along a little slower for Ibaka, but you look at the moves they made this year. You look at the moves they made this year, you know, Jakob Poeltl's a tough loss, but offensively, Greg Monroe's a guy who fits that really well. He's been one of the best passing big men for a long time, and I don't think he's going to make the main roster. He might be a two-way, but even a guy like Eric Moreland, who, you know, is a fifth or sixth big and is basically just a strong rebounder, but even he, you know, puts up strong assist numbers when he's gotten opportunities in the G League and with the Pistons. So they're clearly putting value on everyone on the floor being able to dribble the ball, which is, you know, it doesn't sound novel.
Nah, it is novel, man. When you look back at some of those Raptors teams, the big men never touch the ball, which, you know, in some cases was a good idea. Like Bismack, you don't need to give Bismack the ball.
Yeah.
I think they've been trying to go in this direction for a while too, because like even with a guy like Jared Sollinger, like I think the idea
that was the intention,
was to have him have the ball a little bit. Even Scola had the ball just a little tiny bit.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was like 2,000 years old. By the way, now that we have you here, you're the perfect person to ask about Eric Moreland.
Yeah.
Sending an Exhibit 10.
Yeah.
You have an issue because I think you have written 700 words on the signing of Eric Moreland.
Yeah, man. I actually like Eric Moreland a lot.
Okay. Let us know about Eric Moreland.
So basically the Raptors won't use one of their two-way spots. Right. Their camp roster's full, but Jordan Lloyd's the only guy on two-way. So I think the five guys who are on Exhibit 10s, which, by the way, a great job by them to get five guys on Exhibit 10s. Last year, they only had two that ended up in the G League. So that's a nice way to fill up the 905 if all those guys agree to go down. But I think you're looking at one of those guys is going to be the second two-way, and he's going to provide NBA depth, similar to how last year, because they were in the they were close to the tax, they didn't want to get a 15th man. So Lorenzo Brown and Malcolm Miller split the 15th man time. Right. I think they're going to do the same thing this year with Jordan Lloyd, and you look at the roster, they could probably use another big. Eric Moreland played 67 games or 63 games for the Pistons last year.
Yeah.
Elite rebounding numbers. Jacob Goldstein's player impact plus minus rates him as like 98th percentile defensively.
Okay.
He's like second percentile offensively because he can't really do anything but put back. He has some decent vision for, you know, a groundbound interior big guy. But he's only shot 1-3, I think, in his career. So he's nothing flashy, but like if he's your depth center who can come up if JV or Monroe are hurt or something like that, and otherwise anchor your 905 defense.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a bad option. I still think I'd probably put the odds slightly better that Chris Boucher gets that slot.
Sure.
Just because the upside is so much higher with Boucher.
To
where
we saw in the summer league too. He had a lot of crazy impact.
Yeah. And he needs work. Like he barely played last year because he was coming back from ACL.
Yeah.
So this is a guy who got a really late start to basketball.
Yeah.
Did the JUCO thing before landing at Oregon. Got hurt his senior year, missed almost all of it. I think he played 18 G League games and one NBA game last year.
Right.
And then, you know, he needs a lot of work. What I heard from Summer League was that the reason he didn't play in the early games is that among the guys that were there, Augusto Lima, and who we saw Canada play against the other day, Trigvi Helenasson.
Shout out Trigvi.
And then Siobhan Thompson was there. He was a little behind on the schemes and stuff.
Yeah.
And I heard the same thing with Canada basketball when he was so great in those exhibitions out of Vancouver,
mm-hmm.
and then he didn't make the team for the game that was here in July.
Right.
And it was the same kind of thing. A little slower on the schemes. So I think he just hasn't played enough high-level basketball yet to where you saw in Summer League, it doesn't matter sometimes because he can make up for his mistakes by blocking all these shots and dunking everything around the rim.
Right.
But, you know, he could probably use at least half a season in the G League, you know, figuring it out and learning how to play system basketball and stuff. So he's probably the guy that has the inside track on the two-way.
Mm-hmm.
Dangadel, undrafted rookie out of Louisville, who could be kind of a gritty 3-and-D type. He shot like 35-36% on threes and has, you know, the kind of defensive profile you like in guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would think one of those three would get the two-way.
Yeah.
I'd probably rank it Boucher, Moreland, Dangadel,
right.
and then Felder and Collins with the other guys on Exhibit 10. And
that
the team already
Felder
has
didn't
so
really
many,
make sense.
The team
like
already
a,
has so many guards.
Yeah. That one felt like a favor to Phil Handy or something.
It's possible. They might also see, you know, Felder's market was cool, and they knew right away he was willing to go to 905.
Yeah.
The 905 have learned over the 3 years of existence, you need a lead point guard who can kind of control the offense. And they had that with Lorenzo Brown, and they were terrible when Lorenzo Brown wasn't down there last year, which is why he won the MVP. And the year before, with Fred VanVleet and DeLon Wright, they both, DeLon Wright when he was coming back, and it was just like, okay, he's ready. And Fred VanVleet, who was just like, man, it's a joke that he's down here. And they were down 1-0 in the finals and sent Fred down and were basically like, go win this championship and then come back for the playoffs. So I think they value that a lot. So between, you know, so VanVleet won't get sent down. Wright's not getting sent down. Brown's not eligible to be sent down unless he were to approve. So you have Jordan Lloyd, and then if one of Felder or Collinsworth ends up there, you've got a nice starting point for your 905 team. And I know they value that a lot because not only to win games, but to like get your young guys the ball in the right position and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You need to feed Boucher those all oops, right?
Well, exactly. Okay. What else is on the list?
I feel like we've talked about all the little things and not the big things, man.
It's okay. If you know what you're getting with a Blake Pot.
That's the brand, yeah.
You were at the Giants of Africa breakfast.
Yeah, that was last Tuesday. That was really great, man. When Masai gets talking about that kind of stuff, it's really inspiring. It's hard not to get fired up listening to it and the way that he tries to make a difference. And, you know, you loop in a figure like Barack Obama, and all these NBA players, either from Africa or not from Africa, and the way they're trying to, you know, empower the youth to be leaders and empower women to try to change how the treatment of women in Africa. It's great. I think those videos that they showed us are going to hit YouTube or
whatever
soon enough, and
they're
must watch. And if anyone hasn't watched the documentary yet, like the full length.
Oh, Giants of Africa,
though? Yeah, that was
have
last
to,
year.
You have
that's
to.
An absolute must watch. Masai also talked about Kawhi Leonard a little bit. I didn't even know that we were going to do this. They let us scrum up with Masai.
Nice. I mean, what did he say? Because he also went on the Woj pod, and he was kind of asked about Kawhi. And I think Masai has been sort of really careful with his words, especially about the health of Kawhi.
I don't think he wants to overpromise. Yeah.
Right. So, where is everything on that front in terms of, you know, is he in town? Is he
The biggest takeaway I had from it is that Kawhi has been here multiple times.
Okay,
which
right.
I think we only knew publicly that he was here right after the trade when there was the hostage photo of him and Masai and Bobby Webster where he basically had to hold up today's newspaper date and put on a fake smile. But apparently he's been back here a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
He's mostly been training out in L.A., which I know people make a big deal of because he's
the whole league is training in L.A.
Because he's with Kobe or he's with whoever. And all these Rico Hines runs are in L.A. Like, all the guys are in L.A. So I don't know how much he's worked out with his teammates, but he's been working out with Phil Handy and Jeremy Castleberry and John Cabracho from the Raptors staff. So that's, you know, encouraging.
That's the tall guy that we've seen in the...
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I was curious who that was.
Yeah. And then, yeah, from what Nick Nurse has said about the conversations they've had, you know, and Masai kind of gave this impression, too, that, like, obviously these big picture questions are going to hang over everything, and they're not going to get an answer from Kawhi until July.
No.
And it's going to be a lot of people trying to find signal in a lot of noise that might not have any signal. The prevailing feeling that I've gotten from Masai Ujiri and from Nick Nurse is that everyone at least trusts that once it becomes about basketball, the basketball stuff is going to work.
Right.
Kawhi is so focused and so competitive and such a basketball junkie, and all he thinks about is basketball. He's going to fit with a guy like Nick Nurse, a guy like Masai, who's ultra competitive, a guy like Kyle Lowry, who thinks the game at such a high level. I haven't talked to anyone really who's like, yeah, the team might not work, or Kawhi might not fit, or Kawhi might not like the system. I haven't heard any of that. It's all, you know, will he like the city? Will he like, you know, what are they going to do with his media obligations? How serious is the Lakers and the Clippers stuff? And that's stuff that no one's going to know, really, because first of all, Kawhi probably doesn't know yet. And then you know at this point that, like, if it's Kawhi's camp, it's probably Ramona or Woj getting it.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, I know people are going to look for every little thing.
Of course.
Like, when DeRozan was – I was talking with Woodley about this today. When DeRozan was a free agent, DeRozan basically came out and was like, as much as he could, be like, stop asking me about this.
Yeah.
I'm going to be back. Don't, like – just let's not talk about it.
Yeah.
And we still had to aggregate every Stephen A. Smith soundbite that Nike fed him because Nike wanted to more in L.A. So it's going to be a lot of that. But I think the important feeling ahead of camp right now is that everyone thinks it's going to work basketball-wise.
Right.
And the on-court stuff isn't going to be that big an issue. So
right.
The health is obviously a question. I would not be surprised if we head into the season and not only from the Raptors side, but Kawhi's side, maybe wanting to manage it too, that, you know, maybe he doesn't play some back-to-backs, or he doesn't play the 3-4. You know, maybe he plays 70 games. And the Raptors have done that with Kyle Lowry in the last couple of years too, and they've started to rest guys more and lean on that sports science. And I think that's fine. I think as long as he's out there, you know, you want him out there day one probably to build that chemistry. And
yeah,
everything.
For sure.
But yeah, man, apparently he's been working out hard and everything. I don't know. I'd be surprised if there's much drama.
Okay.
From here.
I mean,
there's going to be drama, but
there's definitely going to be drama.
Like, sorry, I'd be surprised if there's much tangible drama coming from within the team. I think it's, you know, it's a nice thing about basketball, man. It's like, the NBA's crazy. It's a wild 12 months. But unless it's like a Jimmy Butler, Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, Mr. Stewie Girl situation.
Unsourced.
You know, the...
completely speculation.
Yeah, because of some Instagram stuff a month apart.
The evidence is like, yo, he stopped liking her Instagram posts. It's like, yo, listen.
And then a month later, these two people were in the same country a week apart.
I mean...
Scandal.
That's a huge scandal.
Speaking of Instagram, Amir and Pat were here this week working out, eh?
Yeah. Why not?
I love when players do that.
They love that. What, was Pat here for TIFF? Probably.
It might have been TIFF. I thought maybe he just had some tabs to sell or something.
Oh, man. I mean, I work at King Street, so I probably would have seen him.
They both posted Instagram stuff working out here, and Amir was actually at the old Air Canada Center practice court.
Oh, shit. Upstairs.
Which is, it's always cool, man. I love that the guys who played here, I mean, obviously all summer there are a lot
of
NBA guys here, and like Corey Joe's like making candles at in Yorkville and stuff.
Okay.
I forget who told me that, but someone, I think it was Mallory, was telling me that on his Instagram, he's like regularly making candles.
Is
now.
He
like,
super wiped out? Is that why?
I don't know.
Okay. Because that's a weird thing for a single guy to just do.
Yeah, but he's had a weird offseason. He's gone to the cornrows, like the aggressive braiding.
Yeah.
He was really funny at Canada Camp this year. So the Canada Camp that was here happened during the moratorium. And he was like, he was getting a massage one day, and he's like, what's going on? Like, what's Woj saying? And he's just like asking me what's happening on Twitter. And then I think that was the day that it was rumored the Pacers were going to make Aaron Gordon a huge offer.
Oh, right.
And he was just like,
Interesting.
Corjo's the best, man. Him and Tristan and Kelly O, this constant commitment to the national program is great. We don't need to talk about the national team. But, oh, by the way, the women started the World Cup on Saturday.
Nice.
And if you haven't been watching that, you should absolutely be watching that. Because they might medal, and they're really good.
That's in Spain.
Tenerife.
Yeah.
Sounds like a terrible place to spend some time, you know?
Yeah.
The coast of Spain.
Yeah. Are you worried about Jimmy Butler wanting to go to the Clippers and the Clippers having two max cap room slots? And this sort of persistent rumor that Kawhi wants to sign with the Clippers?
Yeah, I mean, look, Ramona knows of what she speaks when it comes to everything and when it comes to Kawhi specifically, it seems.
Yeah.
And she had the Clippers at number one and the Raptors at number two in likelihood.
It's not bad.
If the Clippers could land a number two star ahead of time, I think that always makes things easier.
Yeah,
because
sure.
You can enter that meeting without the hypothetical of if we get both of you guys.
Right, right.
And it's like, no, he's right here. We got him.
Yeah.
I think that makes things easier. I think it's interesting at least that no one's really being tied to the Lakers that much.
I mean, it's LeBron's show, man.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people want to share the spotlight.
As Grange pointed out on Twitter, I think yesterday, this Space Jam stuff, though, what if LeBron circumvents the cap by paying these guys big money out of his production company to star in Space Jam and then sign to minimum deals? Unless the Monstars are going to be like Lance Stevenson and Rajon Rondo.
I was going to say, those guys make sense. Michael Beasley,
as the Monstars, it was just... Like, it was totally just LeBron with an ego check. And he was just like, the Monstars were just everyone who's been called a LeBron stopper before. So it was like DeMar Carroll, OG, PJ Tucker.
Everyone on the Raptors.
Marcus Morris.
Marcus Morris is not bad, though. He's probably the best.
Kawhi
and Iguodala.
PJ's probably the best one that we've seen in the last 2 years. But even then, he didn't get the start until game four of the series.
Didn't make any sense. Did not make any sense.
He says in tribute with a throat lozenge in his mouth.
Yeah, well, still bitter about that. Yeah, I mean,
good luck with half-healthy Reggie Jackson, by the way.
I'm really rooting against the Clippers this year. I hope Jimmy Butler decides to go to New York City. I hope Brooklyn
Jimmy and Kyrie going to the Knicks is the funniest outcome, I think.
That would be great, man. As someone mentioned to me, I think it was Drame, but he mentioned... There's one healthy knee between Porzingis, Kyrie, and Jimmy Butler. So, I mean, as long as they share it and take turns and book the knee, like, it'll be all right.
I think that'd be the funniest outcome.
Yeah. Also, I don't think that's going to be a good team, by the way. That's not a good team.
Yeah, it's weird. Unless Chris Epps comes back and he's fully healthy and he takes a leap. But, you know, Jimmy and Kyrie are going to be getting into the back end of their
saying. Butler's 29.
Yeah.
Are they going to win now? Like, you got to win the next 3 years, basically, for them. So...
Yeah, and then, I guess with the Clippers, the interesting wrinkle there is that if Thibodeau's the guy who's allowed to make this trade, which I don't think he should be, it's yet another example that the coaches should not have decision over personnel, because clearly the Wolves should be in a trade Butler to take a step back.
Yeah.
Townsend and Wiggins aren't there yet.
CJ McCollum, send him to Portland.
Yeah, I mean, that's one option. But if you look at the Clippers, they're an interesting team because they can offer win-now stuff.
Yeah.
So long as the Clippers are cool being like, okay, Jimmy, we're probably not going to make the playoffs this year because like we got to give up Tobias Harris and Lou Williams and one other piece. I probably don't give up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to get Jimmy Butler when I can just sign Jimmy Butler in the offseason. But I'm still in the tank for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Shai's good, man.
He's good.
Dude, you were at the Crown League game, right?
Yeah.
He dominated.
I saw him in Summer League, too. He was the best point guard there, I thought.
Yeah.
He's better than Wiggins, so.
Oh, Wiggins. Let's not talk about Wiggins, all right? Him and his brother going at Steven Jackson. Getting dunked on by Steven Jackson. It's one of the rare dunks you see in Big Three. All right, let's look ahead to... Actually, no, before we look ahead to the storylines of the season and what we're looking for in media day and stuff like that, you wrote a great piece on The Athletic. About Fred VanVleet and the sort of decision that led to him re-signing. VanVleet is a great piece. I think there was some tidbits in there that I really found interesting.
There's one really weird one that I couldn't believe I got told it, but two different people told it to me, and I was like, I'll include it.
Which one are you talking about?
Utah being interested in.
Yeah, I was going to say Utah. I mean, like, Phoenix we kind of knew about.
Yeah, Phoenix was basically, everyone thought that was going to happen. And then when they spent the money on Trevor Ariza,
made no sense. None.
It didn't. I know why you like a guy like that around your young guys.
But still.
Especially so early in free agency.
Yeah.
And apparently they were still interested after that. But it would have taken VanVleet being very patient and leaving that offer that the Raptors that he signed, letting it sit there.
Yeah.
And maybe that goes away.
Yeah.
Maybe the Raptors use mid-level or something else.
The Raptors got a lot of point guards.
Yeah.
I mean, Fred is...
They really wanted Fred back. They offered him the max they could over 2 years, like almost the first minute of free agency. So they clearly wanted that. I thought it was convenient that both teams wanted it only two, both sides wanted it only 2 years too.
Yeah.
Like Fred wanted two plus a player option.
Of course.
And then the Raptors were like, we're not going to give you that if you want the full max. And then that was basically it.
Yeah. The deal makes perfect sense. I mean, it feels like ancient history, but that was the number one priority going into the offseason. Before the new head coach showed up, and then, well, not even new, but, and then obviously the Kawhi stuff. I thought the piece was very interesting because you get a lot of background into sort of him not even taking the call when Masai first called him.
Yeah,
because
he missed the call.
He's at Walgreens because he's being a good dad.
Yeah.
And then, all the banter with him and Norman Powell.
It was amazing, man. And then, I was, I was iffy about including it because,
that was gold.
Yeah,
that was
gold. I talked to him, and he's like, you can include, I said it.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. But it was funny, man. The look on Norm's face when Fred was like, yeah, no, I thought about you, man. I was worried they would trade you to save my cap space.
That's
the look
wild.
On Norm's face was pretty hilarious.
That's wild, man.
It was good, man. It just shows you, though, that
there's so much.
It's hard. It's hard to build a team where not only do you have all these young guys who are good and can contribute, but all these young guys who are good contribute, stay within their role and okay with that. You haven't hit that point of disease of Moore yet, where everyone's barking for 30 minutes or a starting role. And then you've got even a guy like Norm, who he got paid, but this last year was really hard for him.
Right.
And he's still there, and he's happy for Fred. Mm-hmm. Even though Fred staying meant Norm stays in the 11th or 12th man role, these guys really push for each other. And I think, that's an underrated aspect sometimes. And you see it now with what's alleged to be happening with the Timberwolves. And chemistry is a weird thing because while you have it's like you can't put your finger on it. But while you have it, the impact is clear. But you never know when it's going to just go away. So as long as they have it, it's... But they're going to face more of that because, DeLon Wright can sign an extension up to October 15th.
Do you think they will?
I don't. I think the 2019 market is too...
A lot of people are banking on that. A lot of people took one-year deals.
I was going to say, there's going to be a lot more money on the market. So if you're DeLon Wright, you're probably I'll wait it out if they're not going to give me...
Yeah.
If they don't give me Van Vliet money, I'm going to wait it out and see. Especially because DeLon's older, so this is probably his only time he's really going to get a big multi-year offer.
He's worth Van Vliet money.
He is.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's not worth that money to the Raptors, I don't think, when you already had Van Vliet and Lowry.
Well, we'll see.
I think a lot of it, too, for the Raptors could depend on what happens with Leonard, where if he resigns, then, suddenly your books look different. If he doesn't resign,
then you've
got 2020 clear still, and you don't want to give out long-term money. Right now, Norm's the only guy on the books for 2020.
We got hype for Norm, man. We got hype for him, but listen, he still has time. He has lots of time.
People were mad at me in the comments his rookie year, though, shooting down the Westbrook comps.
The Dwayne Wade.
You don't understand the grind. I actually still think Norm's going to be fine.
Yeah, he will be. He will be.
I think he's shown too much. It's like, it's an old Bill James baseball thing. It's like, once you display a skill, you own it.
Yeah.
It's there somewhere. You just got to find it again. And I don't know if the three-point shooting might have been an aberration his rookie year, but there was no good reason last year why he couldn't dribble or finish or defend.
I mean, the finishing, I think, is just...
The finishing has always been a weakness.
Too far out.
Yeah, the finishing has always been a weakness.
Yeah.
But, he regressed pretty much everywhere.
Yeah. No, there were games... I remember one game he came in for 5 minutes and was a minus 12 or something like that. It was against the Chicago Bulls, and it was a blowout. But
I think that was also weird. He had some... his on-off numbers were skewed a little bit in the wrong direction by the fact that... There was that stretch where they were trying to keep him in the rotation when there wasn't a spot. So he was playing 4 minutes at the end of the second quarter with the starters, which we already knew was a bad lineup, and then garbage time.
Yeah.
And that's it's good to get a guy minutes, but you can't. That's pretty noisy stuff. But it'll be interesting to see how they use him, because if you're looking strictly from an asset management perspective, it would make sense to try to force him into the rotation early and see if you can recuperate some of that value.
Yeah.
I think they'd still like to trade him between now and the deadline to save a little on luxury tax and maybe flip him for a big to balance out the roster a little bit. But
I mean, the guy that's easier to move, I've already mentioned this on the pod, is CJ Miles. But
Right. The thing is that the one thing CJ Miles does really well is super valuable.
Oh, yeah. I think, by the way, I think the Raptors are going to lead the league in three-point shooting this season in terms of attempts.
They might.
They might lead the – they might break Houston's record for makes last season. All-time NBA record for
three-point makes. I'm not going to go that far.
Like one but, I mean, like, okay, look. Houston made 1,200-something threes last year.
Sure.
The Raptors made 950.
Okay.
You swap out Kawhi and Danny Green for Pirtle and – DeMar, that's another 200.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a straight swap because some of those minutes are, you know, Greg Monroe or
but
whatever. But
it's close. And then if they do go small, and we could talk about the rotation in just a second, but like if they go small a lot more, then when, generally speaking, when you go smaller, you end up with more threes.
And I do think they're going to have.
And they're going to play faster too, I think.
I think they're going to play faster. I think they're going to. We saw a lot last year. The second unit was very good at forcing turnovers and getting out in the run.
Yeah.
They weren't, that bench mob was not a very good half court offense.
No.
But when they could get a run. They were awesome, and they were so good at forcing turnovers. And Nurse has talked about it. It was another thing I wrote with The Athletic this week was, you know, if you can – his thing was, like, his focus is mostly on the defensive analytics, and, like, a lot of that is, like, the way the summer league team played, he told me his philosophy was, well, we want to be hyper-aggressive out of the gate because it's easier to teach guys to be that super-aggressive and then scale back than it is to be more passive and then later be like, okay, now be more aggressive. So, you know, preseason, they might be foul heavy or something like that. But I think they're going to turn that up a little bit.
Okay. Let's talk about the rotation then. The two starting spots that are accounted for are point guard
and wherever you want
small. One of the three wing spots. The big question is what you do with the JV and Ibaka combo. Because I don't think they're completely in love with it. Even though the results are not necessarily as bad as people think they are.
The regular season on numbers were great. And the Raptors were an elite rebounding team when they were on the floor together.
Which makes sense.
Look, man, rebounding is not underrated necessarily. But like that's part of it, man. That's managing the possessions, right? It's like you win the rebounds, you have more shooting possessions than the other team. It's the same reason they want to ratchet up the turnovers. It's like you want to get more – the number of possessions is even. You want to get more shooting possessions than the other team. Anyway, for the rotation, I think Nick Nurse will come in and he wants to try a couple different things in the starting lineup. I think he'll probably want to see what JV alone will look like and thereby see what Ibaka with the bench looks like. Because my only issue with starting Ibaka and JV together is that – then you have Greg Monroe in the backup center role for sure.
Yeah.
And then you have to play an 11-man rotation basically.
Yeah. Which
because
I don't
there's
like.
Someone one of OG or Danny Green is then coming off the bench and where you fit those guys. So for me, the starting line I think makes the most sense. But obviously like we're splitting hairs. They can start a number of different ways. I would think I would go Lowry Green, Kawhi, OG, JV.
Yeah.
And
that's
then
the one
it's
I
the
to.
Bench mob with Serge in Jakob Pertl's place.
Right.
And it's not like Ibaka could still see plenty of minutes of power forward like that or minutes with the starters.
Yeah.
And it's not like Ibaka slowed down a little bit.
I think he likes playing center more too.
Yeah. And
you get more blocks.
Still played that drop back scheme that Ibaka would be is fairly well suited for. And then, you know, he's not quite the screen setter that Pirtle was, but that pick and pop threat is huge. And that bench mob unit didn't have great spacing at times. So
They didn't have great half court offense. And a pick and pop with Ibaka.
Yeah.
Last
even
season,
the mid range pick and pops at the elbow, man.
Yeah.
Ibaka was like the best mid range shooter in the league last year almost.
By percentage,
It
was like him and Chris Middleton, I think, was wrong.
Yeah. Chris Middleton, who took all those DeRozan comps and went the wrong way with it and just started shooting more mid range twos.
Bro. Chris Middleton. Above DeMar DeRozan again. It's nice to not have to talk about that, though.
It does. I think Assad and I were talking about this, that it does suck for Chris Middleton that he every time he plays DeMar for his entire career, he's going to take the brunt of these rankings, even though he had nothing to do with them. Like, did DeMar drop 50 on him last year?
52.
Yeah.
52.
I know it's not all on Middleton, but...
Hey, I mean, listen, that should factor in very heavily into your rankings.
DeMar promising Serge he's going to drop 50 on the Raptors was
great moment.
Very good stuff.
The Serge Ibaka food show is so good. I'm really going to stand for Serge Ibaka this year. This is my stance, all right? I've gone negative in the past. I've been anti-JV. Now I'm going to be pro-Serge.
Okay.
It's more controversial than anti-JV.
Yeah, Serge is not well. Like, even like when we did the player review series,
Serge is definitely not well. Like,
my conclusion was basically that, like, look, man, I get it. Serge is overpaid.
Yeah.
And the fact that they marketed him a bit as the third star is ridiculous.
Yeah.
But he's still he's still good.
Yeah.
He's still a useful player.
Yeah.
I thought it was weird, too, that, like, I love those SI guys, and I think they get too much flack for people nitpicking the rankings. I did think it was a little weird that, like, Ibaka was in the top 100, and they referred to him as a replacement-level power forward.
Yeah, those make sense.
Well, those don't,
by definition,
he wouldn't be in the top 300 if he were replacement-level.
Yeah.
You know, I think he has negative asset value because he's so overpaid when you talk about a trade or something like that. But he's still a useful player, man.
Yeah, for sure.
He's a big man who shoots threes and can block some shots.
It's
hard not to be decent if you can do those two things.
Yeah, that's true. And then, yeah, I mean, in terms of the rest of the rotation, I think it makes a little bit of sense. There was some debate in terms of, do you perhaps start DeLon over Danny Green? Which I can see the arguments for and against. I'm not necessarily against it, but I kind of generally like the idea of keeping all the young guys together and keeping all the veterans together.
Yeah, I mean, there's just like, anytime you can get that continuity, I think it probably helps. I just don't know, like, unless you're worried that Danny Green's slide last year was a lot to do with age and not anything to do with his groin injury that he played through all year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're worried about him, you know,
he
at 30...
He was awful. Like, he was fine.
No, he was fine. He just wasn't, like, an all-defense contender anymore.
Yeah.
And he might bounce back with the groin healthy.
Yeah.
Unless you're worried about that, I'm not really sure what the argument would be because, like, Lowry obviously is great at handling the ball. Kawhi handles the ball.
Yeah.
Both of those guys are already really good spotting up off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then Danny Green is kind of a nice low-usage complement with those guys. So... I do think DeLon can, like, defend at a starter's level. And
of course.
It's never a bad thing to have more ball handling.
Right.
But I'd rather, if you're starting Lowry and Kawhi together, which you are, I think I'd rather have the extra ball handler in the second unit anyway. And then where that second unit struggles with spacing sometimes, you get Fred off the ball because DeLon's handling it, whereas you couldn't shift playmaking duties to Danny Green because he's not that guy.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah. That's... I think that does it for the podcast. I mean, look, there's going to be so much to talk about. People are worried because they're having, like, separation anxiety right now. So please assure the people that you're still going to be writing and you're going to be writing at The Athletic and that you're still going to be on the podcast.
Yeah, man, I'll be on the podcast whenever you want. I will be covering the Raptors full time this year at The Athletic. So, I mean, all the stuff I normally do will be over there, mailbags. All the salary cap stuff,
mm-hmm.
just not stuff like previews and recaps and
pregame notes.
You know, yeah,
those pregame notes, buddy. They were
those things killed me, man.
They did kill you.
Everyone else is like eating a media meal and like
I know.
I'm
Woodley shooting a video with Dan Reynolds.
Can't imagine. Did Woodley's parents even watch that?
No, no.
Yeah. Can't imagine. Reynolds hanging it up yet or what?
Retire
from the blog game?
There's a lot of ways that can be interpreted, but I think he's gonna be around. He wants to be around for Kawhi, and we all want to be around for Kawhi. We'll have a lot more knowledge on Kawhi come Monday, when the Raptors host media day.
Maybe we'll see.
Everything's up in the air, but I mean, look, eventually they're gonna have to face a price, and when that happens, we'll probably, depending on what is said, do a recap or a little bit of mini podcast or something like that. But Blake, man, congratulations on everything. Thank you for all the time at RR.
We don't need to do this, man.
Well, I mean,
I'm
going to
see
man.
You like later this week.
I know. It practically doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, RR is a family and, you know, you're our proudest son. Yeah, there was no tribute for me at all. I was just like, I just left it to the ether.
Yeah.
So anyway. Good luck with everything.
Thanks, man.
And for everyone
thanks
listening.
Thanks for having me on. It's gonna be a fun season, man.
Yeah.
Like we said, NBA Finals preview podcast.
Oh man, I can't wait. I can't wait. By the way, I think the best move is you actually put Lowry on Draymond.
Okay.
Yeah. That way you can
try to dare Draymond post up.
I mean, you need length on, like, you want to put Danny Green on Steph, and then you put Kawhi on KD. That one's the most obvious
okay.
one.
What
and
do you
then,
do with OG?
You just have OG chase Clay. Like, he kind of chased Beal a little bit.
See, I think Lowry is maybe the best suited to do that if that's your lineup that you have out there.
So then what's the point of having OG in the starting lineup there?
Because then OG would take Draymond.
You don't really have to guard Draymond.
This is the thing. The Raptors have too many good options to guard the
Warriors.
Yeah,
you know what? Look, the Warriors are
going to
score like, the Warriors
have
scored like 5 points a game, all right? So anyway, we'll be back later in the week to recap Media Day, and the Raptors Weekly Podcast will be out on Mondays, as always. So... Blake, thank you, and we'll catch you another time.
Want to hear something amazing?
Discover matches all the cash back you earn on your credit card at the end of your first year, automatically, dollar for dollar, with no limit on how much you can earn. Extra cash? Come on, how amazing is that? In fact, it's even more amazing when you realize all the places where Discover is accepted. 99% of places in the U.S. that take credit cards. So when it comes to Discover, get used to hearing yes more often. Learn more at discover.com/yes. 2020 Nielsen Report. Limitations apply.